Evacuees in Port Sudan say they feel a sense of shock at the sudden spiral into civil war. Many have lived and worked in Sudan for decades.
Sudan is living through a moment of real terror. I'm talking about dead bodies on the streets. We smelled the dead bodies as we were coming to Khartoum. The firing, the shelling, Sudan is seriously in a state of real war.
Among those leaving are Syrians who fled a civil war in their own country and have now been uprooted again.
We are around 3,000 to 5,000. The number is large inside the port and also along the Corniche. People are sleeping on the ground, widows, children, elderly, the ill, everyone.
The UN says the scale and speed of what's unfolding is unprecedented in Sudan and says the humanitarian crisis is at breaking point. The head of the army, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has agreed to extend a faltering ceasefire for 72 hours to allow civilians to leave and aid to be delivered. The paramilitary group, the Rapid Support Forces, has also agreed to a temporary truce. But on the ground, fighting continues across the country, including in Khartoum and its twin city, Omdurman. Sudanese who have citizenship or residency rights in the United States wait to board a U.S. Navy ship.
We hope God brings peace to everyone in Sudan. We are Sudanese people residing in the U.S. People should not think that Sudan has been destroyed. No, things have happened, but we wish to stay strong.
This group of Somalis arrived in Mogadishu from Port Sudan.
I am pleased that I have finally arrived in my country. However, what we have been through is unusual and hard to describe, but I am grateful for the opportunity to survive.
But for millions of Sudanese, there is nowhere to go. They're trapped by fighting in a country the UN says is falling apart. Victoria Gatenby, Al Jazeera.
Well, we've got correspondents right across developments on this story. Ahmed Idris is standing by for us in a border town in Chad. Harry Mutasa will join us from Juba, the capital of South Sudan. But first, let's speak to Hiba Morgan. She's on the ground for us in Khartoum. Hiba, I see that the UN's World Food Programme is now saying that they're going to restart operations in Sudan. That's got to be good news, right? Does that mean there's more stability now, perhaps?
Well, it gives you a reflection of the needs of the people here in the capital and in neighboring states, because tens of thousands of people have fled from the capital, Khartoum, to neighboring states like Jazeera in the central part of the country and River Nile and northern states in the northern parts of the country. Now, many of them are living in the open. They're living in schools set up for them by the local communities, and they're lacking basic necessities, food, water, medications. These are the needs of the people who have fled from the capital to neighboring states. Then there are the people who are stuck in the border, also in desperate need of assistance. Many of them say they've been there for more than a week and have not seen a single aid organization delivering any kind of assistance for them while they wait to cross the border into Egypt. Same situation in the eastern border with Ethiopia. Thousands of people stuck, waiting for the chance to cross the border into Ethiopia for safety, but also lacking basic necessities and food and water and medication like the rest of the people who fled. So the WFP's resumption gives you an idea of the needs of the people. Mm. Prior to this conflict between the Rapid Support Forces and the Sudanese army, 15 million people were in need of assistance. That's a third of Sudan's population. And that number is likely to increase, or probably has increased, since the fighting between the Rapid Support Forces and the Sudanese army.
So, Heather, it sounds like WFP's operations are going to be taking place more outside Khartoum. Now, inside the capital, do people feel like the ceasefire extension is going to make any difference at all?
Well, people are looking at what's happening on the ground. They're not monitoring what the Rapid Support Forces are saying or what the Sudanese army is saying. They're waiting on a brief lull in fighting for them to be able to access shops, markets, or be able to leave the capital, Khartoum, to neighboring states or neighboring countries for refuge. People say that they've seen this repeatedly over and over again. This is the sixth ceasefire now that's being announced by both sides. But on the ground, fighting continues. We were able to hear a loud explosion around the vicinity of the presidential palace just a short while ago. Mm-hmm. And earlier, we spoke to a citizen in the southern part of the capital, Khartoum. And while we were speaking to her, we were able to hear heavy artillery strikes. So people say that they don't believe the word ceasefire anymore. There's still many people in residential areas without food and without water and without running, without electricity for days now. And they say that these ceasefires, unless they bring back the operations of institutions and facilities like electricity and water and banking institutions, they don't think it means much on the ground.
Hiba Morgan, our correspondent on the ground in Khartoum, with all the latest. Thank you, Hiba. Well, as Hiba was just saying, in the capital, residents have been describing just how hard it is to live with little access to food, water or electricity.
There is a big problem with safety. We hear the sounds of artillery from this side. It falls in the street in front of us or the one behind. We have to sleep on the floor. There's no water or electricity. There's no food. Most shops are closed, and the ones which are open sell products at very high prices. We hardly eat enough. We only eat one meal per day so that the little food supplies we have are enough.
But now, some who already fled the capital are actually returning home, as conditions are often even worse elsewhere.
The reason why we left is due to food shortages. Grocery stores are closed, pharmacies are closed. You live in a reality where you're not scared of the gunshots, but worried about leaving home to find nothing, no bread, nothing. After we spent 2 days in Al Mamoura district, we had an idea to move in a group to Madani, thinking that housing is available. We discovered that we live in an area where electricity is cut off for 15 hours. The situation is very difficult and rent is too expensive. Many people felt that they went from a bad situation to a worse one. Yes, there is war in Khartoum. It is a pity to leave and face all these hardships, but it's better to face them at home.
Earlier we spoke to Saleh Mudawi, whose relatives are in Port Sudan, struggling to make it back to the UK.
I have a three-year-old cousin who's British national. She's with her mum, who's Sudanese national. They're refusing to let them on the plane. She's severely sick. She's supposed to have a tonsillitis surgery due to it getting infected. But of course, with the war, it got cancelled. She's been in agony, screaming since yesterday. So she has to get on this plane. And they're saying, at first they told her that she could go on her own, but the mum cannot go because she doesn't have a visa, which is absolutely ridiculous. This is a life or death situation. If an infection spreads through your body and you get sepsis, you will die. So are they willing to let a three-year-old child die at the border because the mum doesn't have a visa? Her whole family has a British passport except for the mum. And I think that's absolutely heartbreaking. Where is the humanity in this? She's sick. She's 3 years old. And she obviously needs her mum, who she's dependent on. She's been in agony, shivering and screaming since yesterday. She's a child. Other than the crisis helpline, where we haven't really had much, you know, contact, we haven't had any numbers suggested to us. The community, the Sudanese community, has had to come together and share resources. And some people like Mia has helped me get on Al Jazeera right now. She's been the only person that kind of could take us through the law and all the rights. The eligibilities for a British person is that the spouse or children are allowed to come with them. But when it's a child with a parent, it doesn't apply, which doesn't make sense.
Well, the fighting in Sudan is also disrupting the flow of goods to neighbouring countries. In Chad, food prices are going up. Well, for more on that, let's speak to Ahmed Idris. He's in Adre, that's in Chad, near the border with Sudan. Ahmed, as we've been saying for days now, people are still arriving there. What sort of stories are you hearing from them?
Harrowing experiences, by the way, and these numbers keep increasing daily. The World Food Programme in particular says it's budgeted or is estimated to feed at least 20,000 people. But so far we've visited a few camps. You're talking about those numbers that are close to that figure, 20,000 people. And that is even because some borders close to this part of eastern Chad are still inaccessible by people trying to flee the fighting, especially in the West Darfur region. They're talking about violence in those areas, homes being destroyed and burned, military outposts being deserted, and then, of course, the threat of violence being practical and physical there, with ethnic militias trying to enforce certain rules and also attacking communities or people who are not from their own ethnic clans. So basically, that's what is happening on the ground. And when you cross the border into Chad, the conditions here are really, really bad. Most people, if not all the refugees who crossed over, are living out there in the open under trees. And when you talk to them, there are four things they talk to you about. They lack shelter, they lack food, they lack medicines, and they lack water. And that's the conditions they are in now. And because of the amount of people coming in and the borders are closed through the eastern part of Chad, things are getting more and more expensive by the day as supplies run out.
Adam Ibrahim Dahab has come to Adre Market to buy groceries, only to discover he can't afford many of them. Now, he says, his family must adjust.
Previously, we could afford 3 to 4 meals a day, not anymore. Eating twice a day these days is difficult because food has become so expensive.
The village of Adre is an important trading point, but the fighting across the border in Sudan has changed everything for many people here.
While there has been a steady stream of refugees at this crossing point into eastern Chad, the flow of goods have been severely disrupted. Fighting has almost cut off this side of landlocked Chad from Sudanese ports that supply many of the imports it needs.
Bishara Ishaq is a Sudanese refugee and trader who brought his stock with him. He explains why things can only get worse in the coming weeks.
The prices have gone up because airstrikes hit our main goods depot in Khartoum. The road is closed, so transporting any goods is very difficult. Anyone with stock will now try to sell at a higher price.
Back at Adre Market, vendors struggle to find buyers for items that only a few can afford.
Business is slow, but we're grateful.
Local authorities say prices, especially of food items, have risen by up to 70% in a matter of weeks, and that the government is looking for solutions, planning to subsidize some goods. It's an additional burden on a country where millions of people are already struggling to put food on the table.
The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, is saying that the cases of malnutrition are beginning to rise in this area. This is, of course, an area that is prone to famine, food shortages, and food insecurity generally. And the situation in the neighboring part of, in the neighboring areas of western Darfur area, we keep seeing more and more people coming in. For example, yesterday, inside Adre, we've seen 50 Sudanese arrive, along with 20 Indians. And these were lucky people. Or earlier, the people we've spoken to have escaped the violence in western Darfur, especially in the town of Jenine. They're talking about difficulty negotiating passage through a short distance to get to this side of Chad, simply because the ethnic militias have set up roadblocks, and when you negotiate one ethnic militia, you have to go to another. For example, one individual told us that he had to negotiate for days to access only 500 meters to get into Chad. That's the situation there. And because the violence still continues in that area, remember, Western Darfur has seen a lot of violence over the last 20 years. Because the violence continues there, there is that uncertainty as to what is going to happen. As a result, people are just leaving that area, trying to come to this side. And when they can't, they move farther towards Khartoum and other cities inside Sudan, where the fighting is now even worse. So that's the situation on that part of the border as well.
Indeed, joining the tens of thousands on the move. Ahmed Idris there, our correspondent on the ground near the Chad-Sudan border, talking us through conditions. Thank you so much, Ahmed. Well, let's get an idea of the situation now in neighbouring South Sudan and bring in our correspondent, Haru Mutasa. She's there in the capital, Juba, for us. Haru, I understand people are heading across the border there too, some of them refugees, others returning home.
The influx of people coming into South Sudan is putting a lot of pressure on limited resources here. This country has its own crisis. There is violence in other parts, in some parts of the country. Aid agencies say while they're trying to cope, there simply isn't enough money to help anyone, everyone. So basically what local businesses are doing is that they are going around shop to shop, collecting items like food and medicines. These supplies are then sent to the airport. They put onto cargo planes and then flown to the border with Sudan, where thousands thousands of people are waiting to cross, and those supplies are meant to help them until they're able to cross into South Sudan. South Sudan has a strong relationship with Sudan. This used to be one country. It broke away in 2011 and gained independence from Sudan, but the two countries are still very much linked. And President Salva Kiir, the leader of South Sudan, has been saying that because of his influence and close ties with warring factions in Sudan, he's been talking to them daily on the phone, trying to get them to come here to Juba to hold face-to-face talks, trying to resolve the crisis in Sudan. But until that happens, and if that happens, the concern, of course, is the people who are trying to make their way into South Sudan, thousands of them stuck along the border points, along the border with South Sudan. They need food, they need water, they need shelter, they need transport to get to wherever they're going. Most of them are from South Sudan, so they have family and friends in the country. Others who don't will end up probably in the camps for displaced people that are scattered all across the country. It's a huge humanitarian crisis in a country with limited resources.
Haroon Mutasa there with all the latest for us from the South Sudanese capital. Thank you so much, Haroon.